Hello and welcome to a quarterfinal edition of the Three Bid League podcast. As always, I'm Tyler, joined by my co-host Matt. And not to confuse you all, we're going to talk VCU here with VCU Ram Nation and A10 Talks, Matt Sheltnide. Matt, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me, fellas. Thanks for inviting me to the Barclays Center to do this interview.
Yeah, we'll act like we were the ones who were able to get you in the door here.
Yeah.
But it's been, we're actually recording a few hours after VCU's victory over Davidson. A pretty comprehensive win for the Rams. Things got a little tight there late in the first half, but the second half they were largely in control. So we'll keep it brief on that game, but who would you put as your MVP from today?
Man, I think it's tricky because it really was a team effort. I honestly couldn't tell you, but I'll throw David Shriver out there. And the reason being is he is such a spark that basically when Shrive hits a couple big threes, it just changes the mood. And it's just like, all right, we're going to play defense, but we got like Three Bird out here. He's making some plays. And so I think he hit a couple big threes in the first half. And it just, to me, he was my MVP. It made me feel like, okay, cool. We got this. We're hitting shots. We missed all of our threes at Davidson, so I felt good. So I'll give Shriver. He was in the post game, so I guess Coach liked his play too. But it was just really just a great team effort.
Yeah. I think that's a great point with Shriver, just because, like you alluded to, VCU went 0-for-9 from three in a very narrow win at Belk Arena back several weeks ago. Today they go 9-for-21. What do you think the key is for them to get more of those open threes? Because as we've seen all year with Shriver and other guys stepping up, that really just is required to open up the offense.
Yeah, I think the key really is playing inside out. It's just getting good paint touches, and that'll open it up. And I think we've done a good job. I don't think we take a ton of dumb contested threes. But yeah, when we play inside out, we get better threes. So I guess the key is really to establish the paint. And if you're scoring down low and if you get Johns being efficient and you get Deloge taking smart shots, then you have to sometimes they collapse, they double, and then someone's going to be open. And we got guys that can hit shots.
Yeah, and so far to this point, 14 teams have taken the floor for the tournament while we're recording. VCU is leading all of them in three-point percentage. LaSalle is the only other one who is even above average in any way. The cavernous Barclays has taken a big hit on three-point shooters, except for somehow the team that seemed like couldn't shoot threes all season long. But we'll carry it on to the signature of VCU. The perimeter defense we've been raving about has just been vintage, incredible VCU defense for 2 months here. And today I felt like they really just tired out Foster Lawyer from the first moment, could not let him get in a rhythm. What was your takeaway on the defensive end for this team?
I mean, I thought it was great. Our first game against Davidson, we couldn't stop Menenga at all. And I think a lot of it was because they were content to give up twos and they didn't want to give up threes, even though Davidson struggles to shoot. But, playing VCU in your second game in second days has to suck. But, yeah, we really just contain Lawyer. We've got Ace Baldwin, who won the Defensive Player of the Year. So we got guys that can do it. We're a long team outside of Ace. So we just got athletes. When you're playing VCU and we have such a deep bench, a day after you've just played a game, and that was a pretty hard-fought game against Bonaventure. So I think it's just, just throwing numbers at them. And I mean, that's what we were, top 25 defense. We've done it before against them, but yeah, they really, really, Foster did nothing today, and that was extremely impressive.
All right, so we'll take a look at Saturday's semifinal, taking on St. Louis for the third time this year. Both games were close at the half. VCU pulled away in both of them as the second half went along. Is there anything that you saw in those games that makes you believe that St. Louis may just be an adjustment or two away from being able to give VCU a challenge, or are you starting to feel comfortable?
They scared me. I thought they were the team to beat heading into the season, but because I was remembering Perkins when he just felt like a future NBA prospect pre-injury. And so, I mean, they're just such a balanced team. They have a great true point guard. They got, I love Okora. I think he's one of the most underrated players in the conference, and Forrester is a great backup big. So with Jimerson saying, they're just super balanced. so, I mean, there's just so much to worry about. I forget what your question was, but I'm raving about St. Louis. I mean, like what they have.
You basically answered it. And one specific question here, I'd like to know from you how VCU's looked against zone throughout this year, because Dr. John Giannini, when we had him on the pod last week, talked about how bad St. Louis was at stopping VCU's dribble penetration right. when they met last time. And they struggled to do that against George Mason today, too, early on in the game. Switch to zone, it really threw the Patriots guards right. off. I expect that we will see that for at least part of the game, given the success from today.
You know, that was the craziest thing. So when they played us at our place, they started in man, and then early in the first half, they switched to zone, and it shut us down. We were having one of those off nights, and then we came out in the second half, and they as far as I remember, they played like no zone. And so I'll be curious if they throw out. Now, we do have guys that can hit shots. If Shriver gets going, even Johns, he can hit threes. So we've had games where we've hit 60% from three. We're a very Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde three-point shooting team, and we know how to break down a zone. So I think that's just the thing is you get a lot of open looks, and I think that's probably why they're scared to do it. But we'll see what they try tomorrow and then how we respond to it.
I think today in St. Louis, just a blowout win over George Mason, and after kind of shaky the last few weeks, it seems like they might be building momentum in this tournament. Gibson Jimerson was one of the MVPs for the Billikens, hitting a bunch of threes. Who would you put on defense to try to shut him down tomorrow?
Probably, I guess maybe we line up to put sort of none on him, but I love like a Nick Kern on him because he's so active and he's so long. So he's just, you know, I mean, he's going to take threes. That's what he's going to do. But I like Nick. He's in your face. But Jaden Nunn, he's one of the leaders this year in, like, defensive, all the stats, defensive plus minus, defensive win shares, defensive rating. And so he's more than capable. But, I mean, we got dudes we can throw at him. Obviously, Ace is going to be on Yuri. But, yeah, one of those two guys.
All right, give us a little bit of a prediction here. Is this going to be a happy Saturday for VCU fans?
Man, I hope so. I guess the stat is 70% of the time the team that wins both games actually wins the quote-unquote tough to win a third game. So I hope so. I mean, both of these teams just have the ability to come out and be incredibly dangerous. These are teams that can win, you know, games in the NCAA tournament. So I hope it's us. I hope our guys are hitting shots if they throw a zone out. And if they don't throw out, I just hope we play our defense, and you know, we got confidence. We know we can beat them even when we aren't hitting three, so I hope it'll be happy, but I just don't know.
And before we close this out, I want to ask you, as someone who is close to this program, who's covered them for a very long time here, we had David Shriver on about a month ago. Today, The Athletic actually put out an article deep diving his time at VCU. This guy's a cult hero. The VCU fans love him. What have you seen from that connection? Like,
dude, well, he's just such a likable guy. Well, one, let's be honest. He's, you know, I think a lot of people can see themselves in him. He's not shredded, you know? But I think also, too, just he's a marketing sort of gem. He's got the long hair. He's got the stash. He guns down threes. He's from West Virginia, and he has the greatest sports nickname I've seen at VCU of Three Bird. And so, yeah, I love him. I think I tweeted something recently about just him. He'll play 1 year and he'll leave a legend. He's been a lot of fun, and he's just had such a wild ride to go from D2 to, like, you know, he's just answering questions earlier today in the back of the Barclays Center. You know, so he's been a lot of fun, and I hope he enjoys the rest of his time here at VCU.
The one other player I want to ask about, because we haven't talked about him as much, but Ace Baldwin was just named A-10 Player of the Year. A little bit of a controversial pick to some A-10 fans, maybe, yeah, because he doesn't put up the scoring numbers you see from other guys, like a Deron right. Holmes or a James Bishop. But as someone who closely follows the team, what does Ace mean to the program?
I mean, that guy's just legit. I mean, you've seen what he, you know, he dropped like 40 at St. Louis. He does what's needed. Like, and that's the thing that people don't understand about basketball. There's so much more than James Bishop taking a bunch of shots, you know? And so he just does all the little things. He's a leader. And how insane would it have been if Bones hadn't gone pro and he'd be in the back? But yeah, he's just, he's one of the best true point guards we've had, and we've had some dudes.
All right, Matt Schultenheim, where can everybody find your great work covering the VCU?
Oh, man. Well, I've gotten lazy because I'm old and I have kids and a job, but I do occasionally still do stuff for VCRamNation.com. I got to step it up on that. Very randomly, I'll post something on A10 Talk, but hopefully I'll get a little more in the groove on that scene, but that's where you can find me.
All right, everyone go look up Matt for some of the best VCU coverage on the web. Thank you for joining us. All right, we're now joined by Sam Basil from House of College Hoops and A10 Talk to talk about that wild Fordham game. Sam, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, dude, happy to be here. Happy to see a great Fordham win in the semifinals for the first time in a long time. So it's a very interesting night.
We got to start with the crowd here. What would we say? My estimate was 7,000 Fordham fans, probably somewhere around that. Absolutely nuts. Bigger than what could fit in Rose Hill. How did you feel as somebody who's a Fordham alum and someone who's followed the team for a long time?
Yeah, you know what? It's really funny because actually Paige Messier asked the question in the post game. Like, there were more fans in attendance rooting for Fordham that could even fit in the Rose Hill gym. Like you said, they have a capacity of about 1,800-ish right now that they've been working with this season. And people showed up. I mean, you know, going into the game, they had secured about 1,500 student tickets that were sold for a reduced price. Ed Call, the athletic director, negotiated and had this, you know, paid. I believe, I can't confirm this, but I believe someone from the athletic department, you know, helped, you know, subsidize, you know, more student tickets for that reduced price. So they were really making sure that people were in there. I saw plenty of people I went to Fordham with, you know, alumni that I know from a long time. I mean, guys like Tony Reale from ESPN. So people are ready and people are close by to root for the Fordham Rams, and I think it'll be really exciting to see if people were still waiting to see if they won a game in the tournament, to see how many people the Fordham will draw on Saturday against Dayton.
Yeah, and I think the fans have to be the number one story of the night. Just walking around the concourse throughout, like, before tonight, I didn't even know that many Fordham fans existed. If I don't know, would gather in one place for a game like this. So that was amazing. But I think the other story are two of the great seniors for the Rams, Quisenberry and Moore, both going for over 20 points. What has their impact been as leaders down the stretch for the team?
It's been almost everything. Like you said, they combined for 42 points. I mean, Darius with 22, Khalid with 20. And in every effort that Fordham makes, I mean, they are usually at the front of it. Obviously, you've got great contributors, right? Like Kyle Rose on defense, Antrell Charlton, who is kind of all over the place. You know, he hits a mid-range shot, he'll be great in transition. And then you've got the forwards that had a great showing tonight. I mean, Rostik Nowitzki, 6 blocks out of 10 total team blocks. But again, physicality, strong shooting, stopping runs. I mean, every point that happened tonight for the Fordham Rams, it was usually Khalid or Darius behind that. So they put their bodies on the lines frequently, and it shows on the stat sheet and kind of just in the overall culture of the team. So they are huge for this team.
Yeah, and they combined for 30 of Fordham's 35 points in the second half. I thought LaSalle played some pretty great defense throughout the game. It was Fordham making a lot of tough shots, a lot of contested shots in the muck in the first half, and then those two just beating their guys in the second half. But to me, the most impressive thing Fordham did in this game, and it's of sneaky importance, but Josh Nickleberry has given LaSalle an unbelievable spark this year. Dr. John Giannini mentioned on their broadcast a few days ago that he's so valuable because teams don't realize that they're bringing their best shooter off the bench. He only made one shot today, but more impressively, he only took 4. One of them was a desperation heave at the end. I thought it was incredibly impressive that they were able to keep him from literally just shooting the ball as opposed to even just making it. But what was the biggest thing that stood out to you from a defensive perspective?
Yeah, I mean, the defense on Nickleberry was crucial. One thing that stood out to me on defense, and it stands out to me pretty much every single game when I look at the box score. So, I mean, it's not like something that's unique to this game, but just a testament to Fordham's defense. Kyle Rose, right? If you're a fan of, you know, plus-minus box score stats, Kyle Rose had a plus-minus of 20 points tonight. A plus-minus of 20 with just 7 points. He is guarding Brickus and Brantley in the half court, in the back court sometimes, on a full press, every single possession. And it not, while he might not necessarily, it might not produce a turnover, it kind of sets the tempo for how hard Fordham is guarding. So not only is he actually putting up and getting counting stats like steals, he had a block tonight. He is setting the tempo and setting the mindset for how hard this Fordham team really depends. And it takes LaSalle a long time to get that ball up the court, and it kind of just throws off the entire tempo, and it just leads, and it builds, and it builds, and it builds, and it built to a plus minus of 20 for Kyle Rose tonight.
So with this win, Fordham will advance to play the Dayton Flyers in the semifinals. And it's kind of hard to believe right now, but Dayton won the first meeting by 24 in the Bronx. What has changed the most for Fordham over the last 2 months? And what are they going to need to do, most importantly, to beat the Flyers?
Yeah, so when they played the Flyers, I mean, obviously Daron Holmes had an incredible game. And Dayton has traditionally been a team that draws pretty good crowds, especially when they play Fordham. I mean, one thing that's a reason for that is just how much Dayton has recruited out of the Bronx over these past couple of years. But one thing that Dayton really limited with Fordham defensively for the Flyers, and you saw it in losses to like VCU as well and Rhode Island on the road, they limited Fordham's spacing, and they really forced guys like Quisenberry, who always lead the way in the offense when things aren't necessarily the easiest going for them. Making them make tough shots, making them make a lot of contested shots. And while I think Dayton will try to do that again on Saturday in the semifinals, I saw, at least from my vantage point, Fordham making those exact type of adjustments against LaSalle. They were really good off the pick and roll. Abdu Simbila was setting a lot of ball screens. Darius was really capitalizing on that. Will Richardson, who's kind of just been who I think since the first Dayton game has settled into this role of more of a pick and pop kind of guy. A strong scorer and a deserving starter, but that's kind of been his role and it's his biggest contribution, and it's worked out really well for the Rams. So I think as long as he can find the open screen and Darius can do that and Abdu can set his guys up and Rostik Nowitzki as well, they can use their physicality to get the ball in an open area, space the floor, I think they'll probably be a bit more successful against Dayton than they were 2 months ago.
Yeah, and I wanted to point out Will Richardson because that was the last game before his huge 19-point explosion against LaSalle, which to me was when Will Richardson really kind of came into his own, became a key asset for this team, and he's the best shot maker outside of those two stars for them right now. But while Fordham was clearly the story tonight, I mean, we can't pass over the Dayton game. This was a thrilling battle, thrilling or gut-wrenching, depending on how your perspective and what you cared about in this. But to me, I want to point out Tumani Kamara, who played unbelievable defense again, head of the snake of that 1-3-1 defense on Eric Reynolds especially, but that really choked out St. Joe's at the end of the first half there. And he also tapped in a career high tying 18 rebounds. He was unbelievable today, but I just wanted to bounce over, grab your guys' take on this before we move into the preview. So, Matt?
It's going to be a fight, and I think the biggest thing for Dayton right now, just fatigue setting in. We saw Brady Ewell a walk-on as the sixth man for the Flyers tonight, and he played very well, but this is a thin team. After the game, Anthony Grant pretty much ruled out Kobe Elvis for the tournament.
He's done.
Yeah, and we don't know if Mike Scharf-Johnson is going to play. He warmed up, but didn't get in the game tonight. So I think the day off is actually going to help out Dayton quite a bit, I think. But it's not going to be a 24-point game like the first meeting. This is going to be a physical battle. And just with Dayton's thin rotation, I don't know how they're going to handle Fordham's size right now.
Yeah, Fordham's size has definitely taken a step up since that first meeting with Dayton. I think especially, again, Khalid Moore, he's really settled into this kind of stretch four role. I mean, he's working all over the floor, and his physicality has just continued to improve, especially in conference play. I'll be interested to see if they run a lot of double teams on Daron Holmes, which they did a little bit, and it kind of didn't work too well in their favor. I mean, I feel like I remember Tumani Kamara and Kobe Brea having pretty solid games because Holmes had to dish the ball on some key possessions. So it'll be interesting to see how Fordham kind of spreads their defense. But overall, I think it's going to be another physical game. This has been a physical tournament. I don't know if you guys have noticed that as well. A lot of teams have kind of been struggling from three-point range. A lot of just knocking each other around in the paint. And I think Fordham is one of those teams that kind of sets the tempo for a game like that very early. So it'll be interesting to see how they can take that overall trend of this tournament and use it to potentially make a very successful run in this conference.
Yeah, and we've talked about it all season. If we're going to get into a physical game, I either want Fordham's full roster or I want the duo of Holmes and Kamara. Mm-hmm. Now we're going to see those two clashing together. And an interesting little wild card here, I mentioned after the VCU game, if a game is going to have a tight whistle, that's normally going to go against Fordham because it kind of knocks them out of what they want to do. But with Dayton being so thin, a tight whistle could be really troublesome because while guys like Simbilla and Nowitzki don't really have the skill to attack Holmes on defense, they will go at him. They will be completely unafraid, and they're going to try to see if they can get him into a little foul trouble just by being tough. And so that's a big wild card in this game. We'll see. RJ Blakeney only played 4 minutes tonight. Hopefully we can get some clarity on that from Anthony Grant in his Friday presser as to whether or not something's going on with him. Because that's a guy that you need in this game, whether he's 100% healthy, which it seems like he is clearly far from. But he's going to be very, very important just to have another body who's ready to fight in a war like that.
Yeah, actually, speaking of tight whistles, I think Fordham, while they do play physical, and while you might think that, you know, a physical team doesn't really do too well when the refs are very vigilant, they have tended to flip it in their favor a lot by just using that to get their other opponent in foul trouble. I mean, I think you saw it again tonight. I wouldn't really call the whistle tonight like tight or not tight. I mean, I feel like it kind of ebbed and flowed a little bit. But there were several points where Abdu Simbila was getting, you know, drawing a lot of charges, getting, you know, forcing some blocking fouls. I mean, I think, and you especially saw it against in a game like their win against St. Bonaventure at home. They were in the bonus, I think, with like, you might have to fact check me on this, but they were in the bonus in the first half with like 9 or 10 minutes left to play. So I think if they can flip that to their advantage, I think Fordham could succeed.
I think one of the other important things, too, in this game, and Dayton did a really good job of this against St. Joe's, where they led the whole game. It was close throughout, but they never let St. Joe's break through and take the lead. The Flyers just cannot let Fordham go on a run and hit a few shots in a row at any point, because we saw from this last game tonight, the Rams are going to feed off the crowd. Even though I'm expecting more Dayton fans to show up over the weekend, it's going to be quite an advantage for the Rams, and it's basically like a home court. So the Flyers' defense is just going to have to prevent the Rams from getting out in transition, getting any easy shots, because just from what we've seen tonight, the crowd is going to be nuts.
Yeah, I hope the Rams sell that, like, I hope, well, not we, but, you know, I hope the 8-10 sells that, you know, kind of that one section behind the right side baseline. Because I feel like that they've kind of filled every part of that lower bowl except for that one section. So I think the semifinals is going to be really, really, really interesting, especially now that people had that like little extra day to travel. So it's going to be really fun.
Yeah, I mean, the A-10 honestly kind of stumbled into an incredible situation here. Fordham packed probably 65 to 70% of that lower bowl today. You got to assume that on a Saturday afternoon coming off another win, that's the minimum baseline. You probably could kick in another 500 to 1,000 extra fans. There's going to be at least 1,000 to 2,000 Dayton fans there. Maybe even a few VCU fans excited, especially if they can win that first semi, might stick around. This has a chance to be the best environment for an A-10 tournament game in a long time, maybe even ever.
Yeah, it's going to be... I don't know if this is true or not. Someone was telling me this. I mean, I'm not a student anymore. Obviously, I graduated in 2020, so I don't really know, like, the schedule. But someone said that spring break is starting soon for Fordham, so that might affect things. But where they might lose some people due to students going on spring break, Fordham is one of those schools where you live in the New York area and like everybody's friend's uncle's cousin is like a Fordham alumni. So I think people are, like we saw tonight, and like I saw, you know, in the, you know, just in the atrium, just seeing, you know, everyone that I kind of vaguely knew from Fordham, people are going to show up, and I think they're finally ready to, you know, show up for the Rams.
All right, so we'll wrap it up here because you've been here all week watching all of these games, not just Fordham here, but the Conference of Chaos today produced all four double bye teams winning, and after all of this, the three teams that everyone's talked about all year, Dayton, VCU, and SLU, they all made it to the semifinals, joined by the perpetually worst program in the A-10. That's where we get our chaos here. And so now the critical question going into Saturday, are we actually, against all odds for how insane this year has been, are we actually going to get a Dayton VCU final here?
It's going to be close, I think. I mean, right now, if we talk about the first game, VCU has beaten St. Louis twice. Clearly, it seems like they have the advantage in the matchup, but we also just saw the Billikens drill George Mason earlier in the afternoon. So, you know, combined with the Billikens having some momentum with Dayton being banged up, I think it's pretty unlikely we have both of those top two seeds advance. Although, I'm expecting two very close games.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, these games are going to be incredibly close. And just, there's just way too many factors for me to really be confident about, like, any certain pick. I mean, you know, talking about fans, talking about different matchups and how these teams have adjusted. I mean, some of these matchups, like we're talking about, have kind of had a long time in between now and the regular season when they played. I mean, we're talking about Dayton and Fordham. They played like 2 months ago. I mean, we're looking at a very different Fordham team since that game. I mean, you know, similar roster-wise and a lot of the strategy, but just how they've adjusted and handled that strategy has been completely different. So it will be very interesting to see.
Yeah, I mean, I'll go ahead and say that it's more likely they both very well should be favored in these games. I feel pretty comfortable with VCU. I've loved that matchup with St. Louis all year. They kicked their butts in the second half both times, like we talked about with Matt Cheltenhide. And really the two ways I see St. Louis being able to beat them, they either got to play incredible defense like they did today. We really didn't talk about that game. I thought that was the best defense St. Louis played the entire season in the last 30 minutes, just shutting down dribble penetration from Ronald Polite and Devon Cooper with that zone. They're going to have to do something similar to that again, and Gibson Jimerson's going to have to get red hot. The other game, it's pretty even. I'm still going to go ahead and favor Dayton. Holmes and Kamara were both incredible again today, and as great as Quisenberry and Moore have been as of late, they still can't match that if those two are at their best. But this is the biggest game for Fordham in 30 years. That crowd's going to be insane, and that's going to partially even this out. This is a Fordham home game. But, Sam, thank you for joining us today. Where can everyone find you? Because I know you've had a little bit of change in your work since the last time we had you on.
Actually, not much of a change in my work, just more of a change in branding. So I used to be, you know, I write for A10 Talk still, where I cover Fordham. And then I cover a lot of just general A10 hoops for House Enterprise and our new brand, House of College Hoops, which was a rebrand of the old College Hoops Digest. So pretty much the same links and everything. But, yeah, I repost everything that I have on all the websites that I contribute for at my Twitter, at Samwan2878. And that's probably the best way to, you know, just figure out where my stuff's coming from. And I am going to be doing updates for all the games this weekend at College Hoops HE. So that's where you can find most of my stuff, at least for the rest of the Atlantic 10 tournament.
All right, Sam, thank you for joining us. Everyone, be sure to go follow Sam. Be sure to go follow Matt Cheltenhide. And if you want to get in some reading on the day off, go head over to Busting Brackets. I got a piece up about Fordham and the keys to their rise this season. Great read coming off of this incredible game. And we will be back after the semifinals.